This is Amy Hall. I'm here with Greg Kokel, and you're listening to Stand to Reason's hashtag SDR Ask podcast.
Morning, Amy.
Good morning, Greg. Let's get started, since the last episode was so long. Let's get started with the next question from Alice. Is it unwise for a Christian to pick a career where they might lose their job for their beliefs, teacher, doctor, wedding related, etc.? It seems wrong to view those as not an option, but it seems foolish to invest in a path that will lead to unemployment.
Well, when they say wrong to choose those as not an option, I mean, it's not a moral wrong, it's a pragmatic wrong. What's the point? If you're a committed Christian, what is the point of choosing a profession where you are going to be facing circumstances, moral challenges that you cannot give into, if that's your conviction? And if you cannot get into, given the litigious nature of society and also federal or state law, you are obliged to comply with. So what's the point of going into things like that? Is it tragic? It's absolutely tragic. This is a question, Amy, that would never have been asked 20 years ago. It might not have even been asked 10 years ago, except for possibly in the area of psychology and counseling.
Or wedding planning.
Wedding planning. Well, let's see. Obergefell was just 15, right, or 16. So it's been 6 or 7 years since the Supreme Court decision about same-sex marriage. Yeah, but before that, then there still were lawsuits. Okay. But the point is, there was a time in this nation where common sense morality ruled. Okay. And when there were people who were living outside of common sense morality, to a large degree, there was a live and let live attitude. That is over with. That is gone forever, probably, in this country. I mean, I hate to say it like that. It's so painful. I've been around, I'm 70 years in this country. And when I was a kid, it was a free country. That's what people used to say. Hey, quit doing that. You can't do that. Hey, it's a free country. This is a very common phrase that kids use all the time because adults used it. You can do what you want, you know. And, of course, that phrase was constrained by a common sense moral system, largely communicated or grounded in a Christian worldview. But even if you weren't a Christian, it still was common sense. And this is all out the window, because there is no moral common sense anymore. What matters is not what's good and right and true. What matters is what a person wants. And that's what they think it means to, you know, to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That isn't what the founders meant. They meant the pursuit of eudaimonia, the good life, the right, the good, the morally good life. Not the Miller good life or the Budweiser good life. But the real good life, okay, now it's out the door. Now it's whatever, okay? And if you don't participate, if you don't encourage, if you don't act like it's just wonderful, you're going to get sued or you're going to fined or you're going to get put in jail. And those are in the areas of wedding photography, baking goods, okay? This is in the area of adoption. This is in the area of doing weddings. What isn't touched? Certainly psychology and social work, medicine. And the current administration wants to double down on all of this. So if you don't want to give an abortion, you lose your license. Why should anybody who's a doctor be required to do any procedure at all? Even if it's doing an appendectomy or removing a mole or whatever, why should anybody be forced to do that? when there's all kinds of access to those services by others. It's ideological. It's totalitarian. That's what you're facing. And you're facing it in all of these areas, certainly in counseling. It is against the law in the state of California to counsel a minor out of their gender dysphoria and encourage them to be cisgendered, that is, to see themselves as the same gender as their sex. It is against the law. So the point I'm making is, what is the point of going into a profession where you will not be able to live consistently as a Christian and stay in that profession in most cases? Now, someone might say, well, that means Christians have to get out of those professions. Well, that may be the case. Well, then there'll be no Christians there. That's not your problem. That's God's problem. If you're a doctor and they require that you do an abortion, and if you don't kill a baby, then you are not going to have your license anymore, then you surrender your license. Period. End of issue. Because you don't have the choice to commit that great moral harm just to be able to save your livelihood. Now, I'm not sure if we're going to get to that point, and there's all kinds of forces battling against that, and it's hard to me to believe that that's going to survive a constitutional muster. But doctors must say no, and not timidly. They must say it, absolutely not. How dare you? How dare you make this demand on me? This is nothing but a raw exercise of political power that you're using right now, and I will not comply with it. And if you push me on this, I'm going to sue you. Period. And there are resources like the Alliance for Defense of Freedom and others like them that will come to your aid pro bono. And we pound these people with lawsuits to get them to respect fundamental liberties. And if we don't, it's over with. We must fight back. The way to deal with a bully is knock them down. And that's what these people are. And by the way, more and more people are standing up. And they're saying no. And the more we have that will say no, the more effective we're going to be. But so many people are intimidated. For goodness sake, Christians of all people have the grounds to have courage, because we are in the right and we have the Lord. And if we lose everything but the Lord, we still have the best thing. Now, I realize that, as I've said before, advice is cheap for me to give, because, I mean, I'm not going to fire myself. I'm not going to ask myself to do it more. I'm the boss. However, that does not mean that the circumstances that or the positions we take publicly will not draw fire. They already have, and will not be a cost to our organization and to me personally, because it's pastors have paid the price, most notably in Canada right now, but it's coming here. So we look at, make peace with it now. If you want to go into a profession where these obstacles exist, then you're going to have to decide how you are going to deal with those obstacles. You want to be a photographer? Okay, then, and it's your conviction that it's wrong to participate in a same-sex wedding, don't be a wedding photographer. Photograph other things or other kinds of events. If you are a wedding photographer, well, then you got a legal battle in your, before you. And just keep in mind that I think he was a Christian in the state of Colorado who wouldn't cook cupcakes for a wedding, though he did for a lot. He wouldn't cook a cake for a same-sex marriage, but would always serve gays, no problem. This guy won two court battles, and they're still trying to sue him.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you got your work cut out for you. You want to go into the medical profession? Fine. Be prepared to fight if you are in an aspect of that profession where someone might require that you do an abortion. And by the way, if you have part of your educational program where this is part of your education, I'd put up a big fuss right there. Okay? I'm not taking that class. Period. I know it's going to be hard for people to do that, but anyway, so that's you've got to make that decision. If you're going to go into some of these areas, you have to either find a way to sidestep the issue by the particular slice of that profession that you represent. If you're going to be a counselor, you can still do lots of good, even though you're not allowed to talk about certain things. And you can especially do good if you're in a Christian environment that doesn't have a lot of these artificial restrictions. But more are coming. So,
yeah, I would like to see Christians who want to become these things to go ahead with that. Because if there's nobody there saying no, nobody there is going to say no.
Right.
If people who disagree don't go into those professions, there will be nobody to say no. However, I also agree with you that you have to go into this with your eyes open. And it might not be for everybody. If you're not the kind of person that wants to stand out by saying no, and you don't think you can do that, then you are asking for a lot of stress and trouble that maybe is not for you. But especially right now, when all of this isn't a done deal yet, this is kind of a crucial time. Mm-hmm. So I'd hate to see people drop out too soon.
Right.
When we need Christians to speak the truth in these professions and to stand up for truth.
Yeah. If you're in the ranks, you got to fight. And by the way, education is another one, public education.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to say no to these teachers' unions. Politics has completely invaded the public educational system from top to bottom. All right. From 12 all the way down to K. It's all over the place. And this is where we have to say, do not politicize my children. Do not indoctrinate them to your politics. We will not allow this to happen. And you and folks have to stand up and scream bloody murder. And when I say that, I'm only marginally being hyperbolic here. Okay? You can't just say, you know, I just disagree. You say, no, you will not indoctrinate my children to your politics using the public educational system. That's wrong. And I will take my kids out of your school if you do it. What are you going to do, sue me? Then sue me. You're going to take me to jail because my kids aren't there? They will not be allowed. You are not over my children. I am. Not you, not the government, not the president, not the Congress, not the Supreme Court. I am. I'm the parent. That's what we have to say. Aggressively.
One thing that reveals, Greg, is that this isn't just an issue for the teachers to stand out for. So even if you decide you don't want to go into it as a teacher, you will still have to deal with it in other ways as a parent or as a community member or whatever mm-hmm. else it is. But here's another reason why I think people should seriously consider going ahead with whatever their plans are. And that is, we don't know the future. And I can think of a worst case scenario and a best case scenario that both argue for Christians going into these professions. And the best case scenario, obviously, all of this ends. We're able to speak the truth. We're not forced to say things that we think are lies. We're not forced to do things we think are wrong. And you continue with your profession just as you would. Now, in the worst case scenario, let's say eventually Christians are forced out of all sorts of areas of life and we have to create some sort of a subculture Like, maybe we're not even allowed to patronize certain businesses if we have certain beliefs, or maybe we're not allowed to take part in any in certain businesses. So, and if that happens, and that's the absolute worst case scenario, well, then Christians are going to need other Christians to be in these professions, because we are going to need to create our own society somehow. Now, the chances are it's not going to be either of those horrible things. But the truth is, even if you are run out of certain situations of using your profession, say as a doctor, there are other things that will be open to you. You could be a doctor at a Christian mission, or you could go overseas as a missionary as a doctor. There's all sorts of ways you can use those skills if you are forced out, if it comes to that, if you're forced out of the mainstream profession here in this country. So if you feel like you have a gift for a certain profession and you have a desire to enter that profession, I would say go ahead and see what happens, because you don't know the future. You don't know how God will use that. Hopefully that's good. Not bad advice.
No. I think that's good advice. We're both saying go in with your eyes open. And if you're not a fighter, you gotta have courage and you gotta fight back. And we just have to say no. And by the way, I mentioned that there are more and more people saying no. And I read about them. And is it this issue of Solid Ground that just went out at the beginning of May, when I talk about freedom fading, I have a short piece in there that I wrote for my wife to read at the school board meeting, where they disingenuously asked for people's feedback about a radical curriculum that they were putting into place, regardless of what anybody else thought. It was one conservative on the board that was consistently getting beaten up by everybody else on the board. But this was my attempt to just say, no, this is not right. And the fact is, if this is what people have the liberty to do when they are in power, what happens when the power shifts to another ideology? Then can the new ideology indoctrinate your kids to their views? No, the indoctrination should get out, and what we should be promoting in school is values that are non-controversial, non-divisive, and universally shared. There you go. Non-controversial, non-divisive, and universally shared. That's the kind of things that our public schools ought to be enforcing, not critical race theory or gender nonsense or any of the other, the pro-sexuality things under the disingenuous guise of anti-bullying, because these people are the biggest bullies on the block.
Let's squeeze one more question in here, Greg. This one comes from Matthew Tallman. Any advice for someone prepared to go into the mission field in Japan next year?
Learn Japanese.
And I don't think it needs to necessarily be Japan. It just a cross-cultural mission of any kind, I suppose.
Well, I have worked in the mission field a number of times, and they've been short term. The longest one was 7 months that I lived in Thailand. The shorter one, I've done 3 weeks in India. I spent one whole summer in Europe, 5.5 weeks of that behind the Iron Curtain in 1976. I've been to Mexico a few times. I've been to other countries, but they weren't mission trips. I was just there speaking, basically. I guess what comes to mind, you have to have a clear sense of purpose for what you want to accomplish. You have to learn some things about the culture. That's really important. When I went to Thailand, there was a book titled Culture Shock Thailand. I think they have a number of books from different cultures with the same title, the same publisher published it. It was fabulous. It really helped out, because there is a cultural language, not just a spoken language. And so there are lots of stuff that you can learn that you shouldn't do in that culture. You know, you don't touch an Asian kid on the head. You don't pat him on the head. I mean, this is just bad. You don't sit on the head of a Buddha statue. You know, that will get you thrown out of Thailand. I mean, literally. People took photographs of themselves sitting on a Buddha statue, And when they were developed, they alerted the authorities. The authorities came to the people, and he put them on the plane. Okay, it's that big of an offense. There's a little rationale behind it. But the point I'm making is you got to know what those cultures are sensitive to. And if you're going to the third world, it's not easy for Americans. You know, no flush toilets. You got to squat, you know, and think, oh, man, I can't.
Probably not in Japan for the most part.
No, that's probably true in Japan. But I don't know what the particulars are, you know, in Japan. So it's obviously a very developed nation. But I mean, I'm just off the top of my head in the brief time we have, I'm just kind of talking about things. But you got to learn the language. And when I say you learn the language, you don't have to become fluent. But you, for the entire time you're there, even if it's a short amount of time, few weeks or months, you want to be alert to learning how to say the things that are polite especially. And that are functional. So the first thing you learn to say is good morning, goodbye kind of things, greetings and exits, and please and thank you. I mean, I can say please and thank you in probably about 10 different languages. It's not hard. It's easy. And you use them a lot, so they come naturally after a while. What are you doing? You're showing respect for the people of that community, and you're being polite. And then the more that you can learn that have to do with day-to-day functioning, the better. You know, learn the numbers. You know, learn how much does this cost? You know, whatever. Just try to fit in as much as possible. The closer people in other countries really, really appreciate that, some more than others. If you're in France and you don't speak French carefully, even the little bit you do, then they crab at you. Just like Americans crab at others because they speak with an accent, okay? In Thailand, every little effort you make to say one word in Thai, people are going to fall all over you and applaud you and say, oh, Gangmok, you're so important. You're so smart. How many years have you lived in Thailand? You know, that kind of stuff. So anyway, so those are just right off the top of my head, short answer, short period of time, some things that would help you, okay? And be sure and have a prayer support team that is going to hold you up.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Greg, and thank you, everyone, for sending in your questions. Keep sending those in on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.